Hello, this is Terrence McNally. Welcome to Free Forum, a world that just might work. I've gone deep into the archives for this 2003 conversation with Nobel Prize-winning economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman on his book, The Great Unraveling. He saw in the Bush-Cheney administration, quote, a radical group that rejects the legitimacy of key elements of the system itself, unquote. Sound familiar? I think it's helpful at times to go back to past conversations to help us understand how we got where we are today.
I've read that the letters that today's guest, Paul Krugman, receives these days have to be picked up with tongs, and that his employer pays someone to delete the death threats from his email inbox. Accustomed to economic circles where calling a stupid argument is what goes, and isolated at home in Princeton, New Jersey from the Washington dinner party circuit, Krugman has become, if not the only, then certainly the most prominent voice in mainstream media to openly and repeatedly accuse George Bush of lying to the American people to sell budget-busting tax cuts and a preemptive and nearly unilateral war. Here on Free Forum, we explore the lives and the work and the ideas of individuals that I suspect hold pieces of the puzzle of a world that just might work. We look at new, innovative, provocative approaches to business, environment, health, science, politics, and media, all based on the fact that I think we can do better, and I want to find out how. Krugman's new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century, number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list and a top 10 seller on Amazon, consists mostly of op-ed pieces from January 2000 to January 2003. He sets the context with a powerful introduction in which he refers to a 1957 book by Henry Kissinger, of all people, in which Kissinger describes what happens when a stable political system is confronted with a, quote, revolutionary power, a radical group that rejects the legitimacy of key elements of the established system. And I'll let Paul Krugman himself expand on that in a few moments. Let me say that I like the fact that he didn't start out feeling this way. His words can't be dismissed by opponents as those of some dyed-in-the-wool lefty. He's a moderate, academic economist who's been radicalized by the Bush White House and the right wing that it represents. Before I bring in Paul Krugman, I want to share a few words about today's election. If you haven't voted yet, make sure you do. And call and email anyone you think might be sitting this one out or might be caught up in the glare of Arnold's superpower. Let me remind you of a few things. Don't be fooled by all the media and citizen interest in this recall. It began as the latest in a consistent pattern of right-wing GOP attempts to play fast and loose with the democratic process. I take the pattern all the way back to the Watergate and Reagan's October surprise, in which he made a secret deal with the Iranians not to release hostages before Election Day. But lately, this current crop of Republicans have really picked up speed. The never-ending Starr investigations of the Clinton White House, the impeachment of Clinton, the purge of over 50,000 Florida voters falsely accused of being felons, the Supreme Court's blatantly political 5-4 decision to stop counting Florida's votes, the redrawing of Texas's congressional districts, and this latest, the abuse of California's recall process, never intended to be a well-financed tool of the opposition to recall a governor simply for being unpopular. This state is enormous, enormously complex, and in enormous financial trouble. Changing administrations at this point is to bring in an absolute amateur surrounded by Pete Wilson staffers is not the solution. Governor of the fifth largest economy in the world is no place for someone whose life has been one of particularly individual achievements. My personal take is that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a man of outsized physique, ego, and ambition. His greatest asset may well be his will to achieve, but I sense the dark side of that is a power-hungry, win-at-all-costs willingness to dominate and use anyone who gets in his way. I suspect that it's an aspect of this personality that we've seen demonstrated in his behavior with so many women, the stories that have come out over the last few days, a behavior that's taken place over the last few decades. Despite our economic troubles, California has been a lonely bright spot standing up to the Bush administration when it comes to areas such as the environment, healthcare, drug treatment. Don't let them bully and bamboozle this state without a fight. Okay, so get to the polls, get your friends to the polls, get your cynical friends to the polls, and see if we can turn this around. Paul Krugman joined the New York Times in 1999 as a columnist on the op-ed page and continues as a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. He's author or editor of 20 books. His professional reputation rests largely on work in international trade and finance. In 1991, the American Economic Association awarded him its John Bates Clark Medal, a prize given every 2 years to that economist under 40 who is adjudged to have made a significant contribution to economic knowledge. He received his BA from Yale, his PhD from MIT, and has taught at Yale, MIT, and Stanford. Welcome, Paul Krugman, to KPFK and Free Forum.
Great to be talking to you here.
Okay. Now, I alluded to a couple of things in my intro that I'd like you to talk about. First, your role in the op-ed pages of the New York Times, how it happened, and how it has evolved.
Well, I was brought on to write about economics, business. Especially my real original home, you might say, in terms of what I do, what has been international economics, international crises. I did a lot of work on that. And there were a lot of international crises in the 90s, and the Times sort of thought I'd be writing about bad policies and disasters overseas and about stuff at home, but typically, you know, the follies of the new economy, whatever. But it was also election season. And it pretty quickly became clear to me, and more so as we went along, that the really scary follies and the potential disasters that had the most, were the greatest source of concern, were at home. So it was a funny thing. I came on really thinking it would deal a largely non-political column. I think the Times thought that too. And then because I knew my stuff, basically, because I could do my own arithmetic, I started saying that, you know, these guys are lying. This is during the campaign, that this is a fundamentally irresponsible and dishonest economic program. And then after the election, increasingly it became clear to me that it wasn't just about economics. So it's a very strange thing. As you said in the intro, I'm no wild-eyed radical. Actually, the American Prospect ran a story about me during the, you know, very liberal magazine ran a story about me in the mid-90s, attacking me for my support of free trade.
I remember that.
Yeah, so I was kind of a bad guy from the point of view of more consistently, reliably commentators on the left. But of course, now all of that seems insignificant compared with the awesome. The awesomeness of the fraud that they're trying to perpetrate on all of us.
Exactly. Okay, let's move to another thing, which is that thing that I talked about that is the introduction to your book and the context that sets. And I think one can easily see that is the last thing written in the book. And you would have never imagined or written that at the time you wrote the first op-eds that appear in the book. And so if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. I actually put a date on it.
And before you do, Paul, let me tell people that are just catching us that you're listening to Free Forum on KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, streaming globally on the web at www.kpfk.org. I'm Terry McNally speaking with Paul Krugman, leading economist, op-ed columnist in the New York Times on Tuesdays and Fridays, author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. And you can learn more about Paul's work at two different websites I'll give you a couple of times during the show. One is www.wws.princeton.edu/P. Krugman. And another that is an unofficial but really exhaustive site of interviews, videos, I mean, everything. Not quite as much as Bob Graham would have, I think, but a lot of Paul's stuff is there. www.pkarchive, pkarchive, one word, .org. And Paul will be appearing tonight at 7 p.m. at the Los Angeles Central Library. That's 630 5th Street in the Mark Taper Auditorium. I've been told it is sold out. It's free, but it's sold out full. But you can call 213-228-7505. That's 213-228-7505 for a spot on the waiting list and hope that other people get discouraged by rush hour traffic. Okay, Paul,
By the way, introduction. So listeners try to take that website, that dash is actually a squiggle in my address. But actually, the unofficial site's a lot better than the official site.
Great. Okay, so pkarchive.org.
Anyway, yeah. Okay, look, in the introduction, I put a date on it, April 10th, just to make it, you know, giving hostages. This is what I thought at that date. If we find a nuclear program in Iraq or the budget picture had improved, then I would have look a little, you might have said, well, I didn't know what I was talking about, but of course everything has turned out even worse than I expected. What I identified, what I realized looking back over my own writings is that it's pretty easy to identify some very radical views, very radical intents on the part of the coalition that now runs the country. It's not just a single group. It's the religious right. It's the hardline tax-cutting conservatives. It's the anti-environmental industry groups, and so on. Put it all together, and what you see is the outlines of an extremely radical program. Maybe reactionary would be the word if you look at it, because a lot of it would be rolling us back to where we were before the 1930s, before Franklin Roosevelt. But in any case, a very, very radical program that would change, that would undo the America that we've all grown up in. And what I ended up quoting Henry Kissinger because his writings gave me the key to why it's so hard for people, even liberals, to accept what's going on. He talked about how when faced with a revolutionary power, really doesn't accept the rules of the game, doesn't accept the legitimacy of the system, people who have been accustomed to the stability make excuses. They say, oh, well, they may talk that way, but they don't really mean it. That if we can give them a little, give them some partial concessions, we can appease them, because he was talking about diplomacy, that we can, that they'll be satisfied and all of this stuff will stop. And that's exactly what's been happening now, that the true radicalism of the Bush administration, it's cutting taxes to a level that will not support the social programs we now have. It's adventurism in foreign policy and so on has been right in front of our eyes, but still have most pundits and much of the public, of course, just saying, oh, you know, well, let's not get too extreme here. I'm sure we can work this out. We can find a middle ground, and there isn't one.
Let me ask you a quick question on that one. Do you think that appeasement approach, that inability, I think, to believe that these people are as far out as they say they are, has been exacerbated by September 11th? In other words, it's my take that had the economy continued like it was, had the lies continued like they were, without the commander-in-chief role, that a lot of that people would have picked up on this sooner.
Probably, although it's hard to say. It's always, you know, we can't
That's right.
rerun the tape. But I think that is true, and part of it is the enormity of it. If you say what is actually obvious, that these people took September 11th as a great political opportunity and used it to push an agenda, both a domestic economic and social agenda, and a foreign policy agenda that had nothing to do with September 11th. That's an extraordinary charge, and the very fact that it's such a harsh thing to say makes people unwilling to see it. So,
right.
It's certainly been true on the foreign policy front that it was obvious in the fall of last year that they were hyping the case for a war with Iraq. But that just seemed too harsh, too extreme to say that the President of the United States would do that. And so there was a tremendous amount of soft peddling on the reporting.
Yeah, I have to agree. And you must, being part of the press, you must think a lot about why this is so. I've talked about this with Mark Danner and others. Is it because they are afraid of his popularity, and basically the media doesn't want to be, rather than leading people, they don't want to be caught ahead of people. They want to stay in touch. Is it corporate profits? Is it just a loss in true journalism at all? What do you attribute it to? You must talk with your colleagues about this.
Well, actually, less than you might think in terms of talking with colleagues. I'm based in central New Jersey, and I don't...
Right. Good for you.
But the basic... here's what I think. I think that the corporate influence thing, if it's important, I'm not even sure I believe that yet. I mean, maybe at some future date, but I think that outside of Fox News, which is, of course, simply part of the machine, it's not that crucial. By the way, I insult Fox News whenever I can, hoping that they'll sue me. so well for L. Frank.
And if they could do it just as soon as, while the book is fresh in the stores, right? Yes.
But meanwhile, I think a better story is that two things. One is that, outside the parts of the machine, the media are desperately afraid of being accused of bias. And that's partly because there's a whole machine out there, an organized attempt to accuse them of bias whenever they say anything that the right doesn't like. So they, rather than really try to report things objectively, they settle for being even-handed, which is not the same thing. So one of my lines in a column, which a number of people thought I was insulting them personally, that if Bush said that the Earth was flat, that the mainstream media would have stories with the headline "Shape of the Earth, Views Differ," and quote some Democrats saying that it was round. And then there's a pretty significant element of, what I've just described involves some intimidation, in the sense that journalistic organizations are afraid of being accused of bias, and there's also a fair bit of low-grade intimidation of the journalists themselves. It's not, I almost wish I hadn't. I have received a couple of elliptical death threats, but they weren't serious. The real stuff is the hate mail that comes in enormous quantities. The organizations that try their best to find some scandal in your personal life if they can and disseminate it, and it's not something that. I don't think a lot of journalists are sitting around there saying, I better not cross these guys, they'll ruin me. But they do know that every time they said anything that they didn't like to hear, that they got the equivalent of a nasty electric shock.
Right.
They sort of get conditioned not to go there.
Right. A couple of things about that. One is I had Lester Brown on last week of World Watch and the Echo Earth Policy Institute. And, of course, he says, this is what they do about something like global warming as well.
Oh,
right?
Sure. Well, global warming.
If there's 2,000 scientists who agree on one thing and 6 who work for coal companies who think something else, they state it as if these are two equal propositions.
Oh, and then they'll attack the ethics of the 2,000 scientists and then get very huffy if you suggest that if you're on the coal company payroll, you might not be exactly the best, most objective source. No,
right.
I know all about it.
Yeah.
So it's been very hard.
It works.
It works. In fact, once in a while they'll actually, in a moment of candor, talk about how successful their strategy of working the refs has been.
So the idea of this revolutionary power, we've talked about how people are cowed by it, can't believe it, let it go further. You first, as you said, when you were doing your initial op-eds, were dealing with the campaign and the economics, and now you feel that it is a basic, the lying and the other things are basic approaches across the board.
Sure. I mean, one of the things I do in the intro in the book, which I had been pretty much writing about in the column as well, is that whatever you think about the Iraq War, the way it was sold was exactly on the template that they used for selling the tax cuts. The hyped evidence, the misleading statements, the bait and switch, the constantly shifting rationale. So it was the same mode of operation. And the same things can be seen less in less fraught issues, at least less politically fraught issues. But you look at the Healthy Forests Plan.
I was going to say the environment, sure.
Yeah, the environment. Well, boy, I mean, in terms of naming things, by the way, Orwell had nothing on these guys.
That's right.
The Healthy Forests Plan is turns out to be a plan to allow a lot more logging in the forest. Clear Skies turns out to first step one. Get rid of new source review, which is an integral part of the Clean Air Act, and so on down the line. So it's definitely a pattern, and you start to, if you step back a moment and look at it, you realize that although looking at the issues in isolation is bad enough, looking at the selling of the 2003 tax cut and what it does to our fiscal future is a bad thing. Looking at the whole picture makes you feel a whole lot worse about what's happening.
That's right. And I think it's where then you begin to see what compassionate conservatism was all about, that it was not actually a description of his policies, but it was an indication of his approach.
We should have realized, and I reproach myself, I didn't quite get it at first. We should have realized that dishonest salesmanship, bait and switch, we're going to be the hallmarks.
Right, and I think you point back to Reagan, who had ideas you didn't agree with, but sold them on made the actual case for them. Whether it was true or not, it was the actual case.
That's right. Reagan, I think, sincerely believed in trickle-down economics.
Right, and I see in the state recall, I see McClintock and Schwarzenegger as sort of those two different types. We don't know yet what Schwarzenegger might or if he gets in due, but McClintock states certain things and is very clear and upfront on why, and you can trust him. You may disagree with him.
Well, he still hasn't quite explained how he would cut spending, but yes, that's right. I mean, there is a different look. It's funny. Not only do I miss Reagan, who I thought had bad policies, but didn't match the skullduggery of these people. I actually miss Nixon.
Yep.
Who, although God knows he did skullduggery, although not as bad as these people, as John Dean says, even Nixon didn't go after the wives.
CIA leak, yes.
Yeah, but also Nixon seemed to be at least sincerely interested in governing. He was actually trying to run the country. He didn't think anybody else should have a chance to run it, but he actually tried to solve the economic problems. People at the old hands at the Environmental Protection Administration will tell you that the Nixon years were a golden age.
That's
actually
right.
did do real stuff. And these people now don't. They're ruthless. They're dishonest, and they haven't actually tried to deal with any of our real problems.
I read one quote where you said, you know, tell me one real problem that they took on and offered a solution that was an actual solution. Can we focus strictly on economics?
Sure.
What is most alarming, if it's the deficit? What we know in Keynesian economics, deficits are okay, et cetera. What's the real problem here, and why is it as bad as you think it is?
I'm sorry, there's one and a half problems, which is still a jobless recovery. And that's a very nasty prospect, and we have seen no real signs of a turnaround there. But beyond that, look, deficits are okay. Keynes never said it was okay to run deficits forever. He said that deficits are good for stimulating the economy temporarily during downturns. What we have is the prospect of deficits that are not temporary. The last estimates I've seen say that of the 500 billion plus deficit that we've got, only about 60 or 70 billion would go away, even if the economy does recover. And it gets much worse once the baby boomers retire, which happens in about 10 years. This is the solvency of the federal government at stake. We have the finances of a banana republic right now. If current tax rates and current programs continue, at some point, the U.S. government will simply be unable to pay its debts, and long before that point happens, investors would pull the plug. It happens we have the same thing internationally as well. We have a huge trade deficit, which is roughly matches the domestic deficit, and that is also, foreigners are lending the country money to cover that. At some point, they will pull the plug. As some people say, we now have a faith-based currency. I'd say we now have a faith-based government. People believe that we're going to get our act together, but there's no sign that we will.
So part of this lulling effect, that we were talking about so much in the earlier section, may be working right now to cover our butt for a while. But,
well, that's right.
Look, but it could turn quickly.
That's right. As at the moment, the actual fiscal state of the federal government is substantially worse than that of the state of California.
Right.
Let me just say that. Now, the laws are different. The state of California is obliged by law to balance its books each year with... It can fudge a bit, but it basically has to clear the books. The federal government does not, and also the federal government right now has, you might say, that Bush has some unearned credit from the responsibility of his predecessors. In the past, U.S. presidents have always, in the end, done enough of the right things so that the solvency of the government was never at stake. And people just cannot believe. It comes back to this denial that I talk about.
Right.
They can't believe that we're really dealing with something completely different now, but we are.
And as you point out, for people who may not follow this, it isn't that we will go bankrupt. It is that we are so dependent on foreign investors that at some point they'll say, you know what, I'm putting my money elsewhere.
Well, in fact, that does produce something that looks like bankruptcy. I mean, there's a point when you have a huge debt, and not only do you have to pay interest on it, but you have to keep on rolling it over because some of it comes due. And if the point comes when investors say, I don't trust these Americans. They don't seem to be responsible. then all of a sudden you just cannot raise the money to service the debt as it comes due.
And we've watched this happen in other countries,
and the thought is
that's Thailand, that's not the U.S.
That's Argentina. This is my specialty. I mean, I've watched it happen in other countries.
Right.
And you look at the numbers and you say, geez, we have a budget deficit that's bigger compared with the size of our economy, compared with the size of the government, than Argentina before their 2001 crackdown. We have a trade deficit that's bigger compared with the size of our economy than Indonesia before its 1997 crackup. You say, well, but this is America, and it can't happen here. But there's a lot of things we didn't think could happen here, and we seem to be in something very seriously wrong is going on right now.
Okay, let me switch now to the what would you do, and let me ask it two ways. Say you've got 3 minutes. If Paul Krugman's solution would be, and then if Paul Krugman were running, if he were Howard Dean or Wesley Clark or John Kerry, if he were running for office, what would his solution be?
Okay, first off, you have to have a plan to get the budget back into balance. And it's not possible to have a plan that doesn't include phasing out the bulk, if not all, of the Bush tax cuts. So you should have a plan to roll back those tax cuts, not all in the first year, because we are still in a recession, but a gradual plan to eliminate those tax cuts, bring the tax system back to about where it was in 2000, which would get us most, though not all of the way, to balanced budget. And then you can talk about other things on the side, but that would have to be the core of it. Meanwhile, we need to get the economy moving. And to do that, you have to do the things that governments always do during recessions, but this government hasn't. Aid to state and local governments, so they aren't laying off school teachers and firemen just when the economy is slumping. Public works programs. As it happens, we have a whole backlog of homeland security spending, ports and so on, that we should be doing that the government is nickel and diming away.
And a huge amount of federal infrastructure that we just ignore completely.
That's right. Just go and do these things which we need done anyway, and particularly now, they would also help create jobs. And maybe on top of that, we need another round of rebates, but rebates that are fully refundable and go to the people most likely to spend the money.
Sure.
And you know, all of that is that guaranteed to work? I don't know. But it's certainly stuff that has a good chance of working, and we haven't tried any of the obvious things.
And do you think that how much of that do you think a candidate could say and get away with?
Well, I think a candidate is going to be fairly forthright. That we can argue about whether the whole Bush tax cut or just the upper brackets needs to go, but at least a candidate has to say that the upper brackets must go. And look, I don't know what will win, and I don't know what tricks the administration will come up with to divert people's attention. But I think that unless a candidate is really prepared to come out swinging, to say these people are doing the wrong thing by the country, there's no chance. Saying that I'm like Bush, only less so, is not going to win this election.
That's right. And I think what I haven't heard quite yet is the point which I've been making on the show, which you make very strongly in the book, which is that the purpose behind these tax cuts is to bankrupt the government, is to undermine social programs that no one who comes into office after them will have an easy time restoring social
That's
programs.
Right. And you don't have to make it. I'm not making that up. You can just look at what the lobbyists and the think tanks behind these people say, and that's exactly what they say. And the program that the administration is following looks as if it was designed to implement their ideas. I think it is.
Okay. You've been listening to Terry McNally here speaking with Paul Krugman, op-ed columnist in the New York Times. His columns appear on Tuesdays and Fridays. His new book is The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. And you can learn more about his work at www.pkarchive.org. For this conversation and many other interviews, articles, transcripts of interviews, and to join me in pursuit of a world that just might work, go to terrencemcnally.net, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com, the same website. If you want to receive my weekly email announcement telling you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and usually 8 to 10 articles to kind of flesh out the conversation, you can sign up at my site or email me at temcnally@mac.com. You can also subscribe and listen to the Freeform podcast on iTunes and many other podcast sites. You can find years of podcasts at my site. That's, you know, Michael Lewis, Jeremy Scahill, Naomi Klein, Robert Reich, Van Jones, Connie Rice. You can follow me on Twitter at McNally Terrence. Thanks to G. Lee and Mark Maxwell in production, George Vassilopoulos at Progressive Voices. Most of all, you, my listeners, please share this podcast widely. Thank you, Paul Krugman.
Thank you very much.